So feel free to use the IM window for questions. That session will be posted at the end. There might be a little delay for the first one. It's on ak.ms/Azure Networking Fridays. This short URL works, but it points to a blog entry. So by the time that we upload that onto Channel 9, there might be 1 or 2 days, but it will be there. All right? So the agenda for this week is we'll cover the network connectivity from 0 to 60. So that's kind of how you get started real quick. And then we'll have a deep dive topic this week with John Orman, who is joining us from the Azure Networking Product Group. John will be doing a deep dive into Azure, into ExpressRoute, the public and private peering, and we'll see great information from that. And we have what's his name, Greg Pepper. Sorry, Greg, from Checkpoint, who is going to be talking to us about VSEC. And at the end, we'll have an open Q&A for everyone. So with that, so ExpressRoute, we love this analogy. I'd like to show you a picture from Montreal. This is where I come from. Unfortunately, we don't have toll highways in Montreal, so there's anything we can show like that. But this is a little bit of the illustration of what you get with ExpressRoute. So you see on the left side, it's kind of like the internet. There's no real you know, guarantee of how much time that's going to take to get you where you're trying to get, much less predictable, but you eventually get to where you're trying to go. ExpressRoute, a little bit more like what you see on the right. You get there faster, more predictable, and, well, but it costs something. But depending on what you're trying to do, it's definitely worth it. So, again, you can always connect to the Microsoft Cloud without ExpressRoute, and this is what we see on the left side, where you basically leverage the internet. So that can be, depending on the workload, that could be through using a VPN if you're trying to do some IaaS workload, or it could be directly over the internet if you're trying to do the PaaS workload type of thing. And on the right side, you do see that there is a possibility to leveraging directly your WAN. This is one example of the implementation to reach the Microsoft Cloud. And from that Microsoft Cloud, you end up connecting to our data centers. So just to give you another illustration of that is like the internet that you have on top is bypassed by the ExpressRoute. So how that really happens is actually more like using an aggregation platform. These are the partners that you can deal with, like Equinix or like CoLogix. So these are the people that I know more in Canada, but my guys here could probably talk to you about a lot of other partners that there are. Plus, there's a carrier type of partners who can bring you to these locations that allow you to connect not to one Microsoft data center, but to the Microsoft network. So, Kevin, take it away from, not Kevin, but Jamie, take it away from here.
Yeah, thanks, Olivier. This is Jamie Schmidtke on the ExpressRoute team. So what we're looking at right here is the footprint of our partnerships with ExpressRoute. So you must remember with ExpressRoute, we connect through our partner community, which you see a number of logos across the bottom of the slide here, and also all the locations we have globally, and it's ever expanding. We actually just onboarded Las Vegas with Megaport recently, and we are constantly working with these partners to increase their footprint all over the world. So always take a look at the ExpressRoute locations page on the Azure.com documentation site, because we're constantly updating it with up-to-date information regarding, you know, where partners are connected, you know, where they're servicing ExpressRoute from. And of course, you could always reach out to either myself, Kevin Lopez, Olivier Martin, or Kevin Sullivan for, you know, further information to help you get connected. So Olivier, if you can move to the next slide. So the way that ExpressRoute is priced out is focused on a tiered model, and the focus is on bandwidth. So we start at 50 megs, and we can go all the way up to 10 gigs, as you see here on this slide. And there's two different billing models. There's the metered model, which you see on the second column from the left, and that is essentially the port charge for the ExpressRoute circuit. As you can see, the cost rises dependent on what bandwidth that you come in at. Now, for meter connections, anything into the Microsoft Cloud over that connection is included. Anything that comes out, or what we call data egress, from the ExpressRoute circuit will be charged at what you see at the second bullet below, where you've got 2.5 cents per gig per zone 1, $0.05 per gig for zone 2 and $0.14 per gig for zone 3. So what zone 1, zone 2, and zone 3 refer to is what you see on the unlimited data side. So zone 1 is United States and EMEA, zone 2 is Asia Pacific, and zone 3 is down in Brazil and Latin America. And with unlimited data, it's exactly what it says. It is everything's included, both ingress and egress. So it's all dependent on your workloads and which billing model suits best for you, and of course the bandwidth sizing. It's easy to change from metered to unlimited. It's just as simple as going through the Azure portal, which Olivier will talk about in a little bit, or going through a quick PowerShell script. And the same thing goes for bandwidth. So it's easy to go from, let's say, 500 meg to 1 gig with the same process as you would go from meter to unlimited, just a quick PowerShell script or going through the Azure portal and changing the configuration. But however, we cannot change the bandwidth in reverse. So we can't downgrade bandwidth, or we can't switch from unlimited to metered. That would require a recreation of the ExpressRoute circuit and obtaining a new service key and working with your partner provider to be able to reestablish the peerings that you had originally set on the old ExpressRoute circuit. One last bullet right here is around Office 365. So Office 365 requires the premium add-on. We do have some updated guidance that has been published around ExpressRoute and it being not recommended and not required for Office 365. And if you have questions around that, we can reach out to your Microsoft account team for further information. So, Olivier, if you can move to the next slide, please. So here is the premium circuit pricing. So as I mentioned, the premium circuit's required for Office 365. And the reason for that is because Office 365 is a global available service, and the premium add-on gives you a number of things, but one of them for Office 365 is being able to get those global routes from the Microsoft Cloud. A couple other things that it gets you is the ability to link more than 10 VNets to an ExpressRoute circuit, and the number that you could link to is dependent on the size of the circuit that you create, and also the global connectivity. And Olivier, help me out. What was the third one again?
Was the global connectivity and the number of routes that you can inject into a VNet. So, for example, if you have a VNet anywhere that's connected to an ExpressRoute circuit and you wanted to or needed to send to it over ExpressRoute over 4,000 routes and up to 10,000 routes, because you have a lot of, I don't know, maybe a lot of subnet inside your organization, then you would need premium to go above 4,000.
That's right. So if you fit in any of those different options based on your requirements, the premium add-on will be able to help you with that. And these are the associated pricing models, both for metered and also unlimited. So this is all-inclusive. This includes the cost of the circuit itself plus the cost of the premium add-on for each zone that you would create the circuit in, whether it's zone 1, zone 2, or zone 3. So, Olivier, if we can move to the next slide.
Yep. So, this is thank you, Jamie. So, this is the kind of how you get started workflow. So, there's a few things that you need to do before you can actually use ExpressRoute with Microsoft. You need to make sure at first that you have an Azure subscription, because Azure is ExpressRoute is an Azure resource, pretty much like a virtual machine is one. So you need to make sure that you have this subscription and that it is available and that you have permissions onto it. You need also to do some planning and, you know, planning on how you will design your network around that. How am I going to connect from where, which peering location I'm going? Am I going to use? What model am I going to use? Am I going to use the facilities, the Meet Me facilities where I put my gear there? Am I asking my network provider to bring me there? Or am I going to use a network provider to do all that for me? These are kind of things that you need to think about before you get started and, you know, reach out to your partner and to your account team at Microsoft so we can help you in that process as well. But you definitely need to have a conversation with your partner to make sure that you know, things are prepared, that if there's some circuits to deploy and that kind of thing, but that this is planned before time. So then when comes the time to actually do it, We definitely recommend using the ARM model as opposed to the ASM model, although that there is coexistence. The ASM model, for those who don't know, is the more an older way of doing things, the V1 of our cloud. Now most new things are in ARM, but an ExpressRoute circuit can absolutely connect VNets that were made with ASM and newer VNets that are made in ARM. So then you go in the portal, and the last steps once the physical stuff is done is very easy. I'll show you actually on the next slide, real quick here, but essentially, the creation that you see in the middle, you have to specify the name, the provider that you're going to be using, which peering location. And there's a difference, important distinction between, because sometimes customers are confused from the top thing that you see, peering location. And if you look carefully in the bottom, there is location. Location is really where the network resource provider is inside of Azure. And this is not that relevant to where your peering location is. Your peering location is exactly physically where the traffic will be exchanged between your network and Microsoft's network. And that will generate a service key, which you see on the bottom right. And this is what you have to hand over to your service provider. And that's something you would normally do at the very end when you're ready to light up your circuit, because as soon as you generate that, the billing starts. So you would normally not want to do that too much ahead of time. I stole from my predecessor, Ron, his cheat sheet. There's a couple things there that you need to, that's going to help your planning. There's IP addresses you need to think about. What VLANs am I going to use? What AS number am I going to be using? What IPs am I going to advertise to Microsoft? So you need to think that through. And if you want to connect also a virtual network, which many, many, many people do, to their ExpressRoute circuit, then you will need to create a gateway subnet. You'll need to make sure that you use at least the /27 for the size of it, or /26, or if you can do it larger, just do it larger. The reason that is growing is because we're adding new features. And as we do that, that consumes IP addresses. And if you can allow yourself to consume more IPs, by all means, do it. It might future-proof you. And again, these are a lot of partners that we deal with. The list is not exhaustive, but there's a few of the ones that we deal a lot with. There's a couple of system integration partners that you find on the top, and a whole bunch of partners for ExpressRoute. They're mainly active in the U.S., but they're also active worldwide. When I think about Orange, for example, or Tata, so you can find these guys, plus a couple of network virtual appliance partner, along with Checkpoint, which we have the honor to have with us today. So again, it's you have to involve these guys, as I said earlier, and you have to involve these guys as early as possible, especially on the ExpressRoute side of things. Because this is, these are the guys who actually bring you to us. So they need to be in the conversation. And the most successful engagement we've seen is when these guys are involved, as well as your Microsoft account team. And also, there's a little checklist that we've put together. It's available on aka.ms/ER checklist. And as well as mentioned, Jamie, a little earlier on, there's the updated Office 365 guidance, and this is also available at aka.ms/ero implementation. Now, feel free to take it away, John. John is joining us this morning from our product group. We're super happy to have him with us. He's going to be walking you through a little bit more of the how this is actually done, and what are challenges that customers find. And I think you should enjoy that. So take it away, John.
Hello, everybody. My name is John Ormond. As stated, I am from the Azure networking team, actually on the engineering team. I focus on ExpressRoute and enterprise-type scenarios as my main focus, but I also segue into network security and other topics like that. And Olivier, I'm going to take over as presenter, if that's all right, just so that I can do my own clicking.
Absolutely.
All right, good. All right, so there was a couple questions in there in the chat stream that I kind of wanted to come back and touch upon. So something that I like to point out is that ExpressRoute is not a connection to an Azure data center. fact, it's not a connection to Azure at all. It can be, but it really is a connection to Microsoft's network. So let me give you an example of what that means, and I'll touch a little bit on the SQL Azure question that came up in the chat room and the MPLS question that came up in the chat room. So by connecting to Microsoft's network, you can go to many of the three clouds. So on this cloud, or on this slide on the right-hand side, the top slide represents Microsoft peering, which is Office 365, Skype, CRM, Dynamics, those public services, SharePoint, that are Microsoft related, but not specifically Azure related. The next is public peering. That represents all of the public IP addresses that are in Azure. And then the last cloud is private cloud. That one's just for that specific ExpressRoute circuit, anything that you link to it. So the preceding pieces, there's the ExpressRoute circuit, and then there's the partner edge. So the partner edge is really where your MPLS would live. So if you had an MPLS cloud with AT&T, then that is how you would get from your premise to the Microsoft network, and then once you're connected with that ExpressRoute circuit, you can choose to peer, and these are all BGP peerings, you can choose to peer with the Microsoft peering, the public peering, or the private peering. With one ExpressRoute circuit, you can do any combination of those three. Just one, any of the two, or all three. Completely up to you. They all show up as three different peerings. So back on your on-premise network, you can choose how you want to land these different peerings, and I'll explain that. So when I say a peering, I mean true BGP peering. So it's between your edge and that's the Microsoft edge. So you will actually see those routes come down to you. So just like an internet peering, only in this case, it's all Microsoft addresses, with the exception of private peering, which are actually your own address. So with MPLS, that works in conjunction, and basically Microsoft would then show up as a node on your MPLS network. If you went to AT&T, their service is called NetBond. If you added NetBond to your MPLS, then you could say add a node in Atlanta. And now you're connected to Microsoft's network in Atlanta. And from that node, you could get to any Azure region in North America with a standard ExpressRoute circuit, and any place in the world, any Azure region in the world, with a premium circuit. So in the example of the MPLS cloud, let's say you had really good coverage in North America, but you didn't want to add links over to Europe. Well, if you had a premium ExpressRoute circuit, you could hop off the MPLS network onto Microsoft's network somewhere in North America, and then use Microsoft's backbone associated with that ExpressRoute premium circuit and ride to Amsterdam or London or Singapore or wherever else in the world you wanted to go, riding Microsoft's backbone. So it gives you the option of writing your MPLS cloud or our backbone. Now, if you just did point-to-point circuits, or if you're already co-located, say, in an Equinix or Telecity colo provider, then you can just have a really short, either a Metro Ethernet circuit or an in-the-building circuit to get to the Microsoft network, and then write our backbone everywhere. So with ExpressRoute, you're really leveraging Microsoft's network. So just looking at the slide here, the center part of the circuit itself, you'll see that there's a primary circuit and a secondary circuit. Most of that is transparent to the consuming user. Everything underneath the covers, the physical infrastructure, is all redundant. So if we say, or if you purchase a 1 gig virtual circuit, there's actually 2 1 gig virtual circuits that are provisioned underneath the covers. Now at the edges, it appears to be one VLAN or one circuit, but understand that ExpressRoute is always redundant. So if you order a 1 gig, they're active. So technically, you should be able to get more than 1 gig of traffic when both legs are up and running, which they usually are, if you pick a high performance gateway. This is just a little bit of what's under the covers, and I was going to go into some detailed scenarios next. Oh, one thing I wanted to cover was there was a question about SQL Azure, and let me go back to the question. Does the replication run across data centers? So right now, SQL Azure is a public service, but I will say, so that would replication and stuff would go across Microsoft networks and not ExpressRoute specifically, but it would be done inside of Azure networks. It would never leave Azure to the public internet. But I will give some foreshadowing and say that the Ignite conference, Microsoft's Ignite conference, is coming up in about, I think 8 or 9 days, starting not this coming Monday, but the following Monday. And stay tuned to for some pretty exciting network announcements during that week. At least I think they're exciting, but I am a little biased. So so right now, SQL Azure is definitely a public service, but there could be some interesting announcements come Ignite conference. So as I said, we've got these three clouds that we can get to. Let's talk about where they land in your network on-premise. So we say that ExpressRoute is a private connection. So it is. Your traffic that runs across ExpressRoute doesn't hit the internet. It goes from your corporate network through your partner's network to Microsoft's network. At no point does it ever or can it ever bleed over to the internet. Well, so does that make it more secure? Well, it depends on your definition of secure. So one of the things that we like to say is that the private peering is your network. So actually the address space that you peer up into Azure is your corporate address space. So if you're using the 10-dot on-prem, which is private addressing, you can use that non-overlapping 10 space, you carve out a little chunk and put it up into Azure for private networking, the bottom cloud on the slide, and that's just your network. So unless you open holes or specifically allow traffic to leak into that network from the internet, then it's private. It's locked down, and as a result, this doesn't necessarily need to go through firewalls. Some customers do, it just depends on your security requirements, but a lot of times customers will just land this on their corporate network and they'll treat it as just an extension of their corporate network. That is, in my opinion, personal opinion, that is acceptable because this is a private network. Now the other two peering types, Microsoft peering and Azure Public peering, with those, we always recommend that you dump them into some sort of a DMZ, that you don't allow those to come directly into your general corporate routing domain, and just add them to your network. The reason being is while the ExpressRoute connection is private just for your traffic, those are public networks. So Azure and Microsoft Public Peering are all public endpoints, and so as a result, that traffic isn't as trusted. It's not as isolated to you. It is in the ExpressRoute pipe, but not necessarily on the Microsoft side from a network perspective. So the private is isolated. The other two are public areas of the Microsoft network. So in that, due to that reason, we always recommend that you land those into a DMZ on your network, and most likely the same firewall that you're using for your internet, same policies. But those are different than the private peerings. Now, again, with the private peerings, you may want to put those through a firewall. That just depends on your corporate security mandates. All right, let's talk about this is a fairly deep topic. So folks that aren't really good with networking BGP, I apologize, but this is important for folks that that do have large setups of ExpressRoute, where you may have either multiple virtual networks in Azure or multiple circuits for redundancy or disaster recovery. So in this example, I've got two VNets, a virtual network in the West U.S. and a virtual network in East U.S. The West is 10.100, East is 10.200. On-prem, I've got two offices, one in L.A., and one in New York. The LA office is 10.1, and New York is 10.2. They all live in the same AS, autonomous system, that defines separate networks from for BGP, the Border Gateway Protocol, which is kind of what the internet runs on, but also what ExpressRoute utilizes as the main protocol for exchanging routes. So in a normal situation, Los Angeles would be tied to the Los Angeles ExpressRoute circuit and tied to the gateway up into West U.S. So West U.S. would see all of the corporate routes, Los Angeles would see the West U.S. routes, and they would talk and everything's fine. BGP would replicate those routes up. So if you added more routes in Los Angeles, BGP would automatically broadcast them up into Azure. And vice versa. If I added another subnet up here, it would broadcast them down to Los Angeles. So what that means is, if I'm sitting at my desk in LA and I ping that server up in Azure, everything works and it's just on my network. Well, let's say that I want to have disaster recovery. I could add another circuit over in New York City. Now, assuming that I've got a large MPLS network, that would be the black oval at the bottom of the slide, connecting my Los Angeles office and my New York office, I could add ExpressRoute LA as a node on my MPLS network and ExpressRoute New York as a node on my network. Now, up in Azure, my virtual network, to connect to ExpressRoute, you have to have a gateway, an ExpressRoute gateway, and this gateway can connect to multiple circuits. So I've got my West Coast virtual network gateway connected to my LA ExpressRoute and my New York ExpressRoute. So, and I've got the same in the East, but I'm going to focus on the West. So with this, I've got a mesh of traffic, so if something fails, I've got failover, but if everything is working, how does this actually work? So what's happening is, from LA, I want to broadcast the routes for LA and New York. So LA is going to broadcast up to my ExpressRoute circuit, 10.1.0.0/16, with my AS, and then I'm also going to advertise the New York routes, but with two ASs, and I'll explain why that's important in a second. From New York, I'm going to broadcast the exact same routes, but for my West Coast routes, I'm going to have two ASs, and for my East Coast routes, I'm only going to have one. All right, so each office or each location that has addresses is going to broadcast the entire corporate address up, but you're going to have the AS paths be a little bit different. So what happens, the gateway, if we look at just the West Coast gateway, the West Coast gateway will see all the routes. So it will see that 10.1 from LA and 10.1 from New York. But the New York route, the West Coast route that came from New York, has a little bit longer AS path. It's got 64.496 in there twice. So this router is going to see that the AS path is shorter, and so it's going to prefer the Los Angeles route. Somebody asked about MED. No, the only thing we allow right now is AS path. So ExpressRoute will send the shortest traffic. If you need to do reverse flow, you can use local preference to do that. So how does this look? Basically, if that VM in West U.S. wants to talk to some address, say 10.1.1.1, it would see in its routing table, that's in that 10.1.16 prefix. The shortest path is LA. I'm going to send it down the express route to LA. And then once it hits the MPLS node, if MPLS is working right, it'll route it directly to the Los Angeles office, and the traffic gets there. Everything's good. Now, if for some reason, God forbid, Los Angeles, we should have a problem with that express route connectivity location, then BGP will no longer be broadcasting. Is multipath express route also possible with public peering? No. Well, I'll have to think about that one. Give me a minute, Barry.
I believe it is possible, John.
I wanted to think that out before I gave a definite answer, but yeah, it should be. It's all just part of the network.
Yeah, well, but you would advertise public IPs from your end, so you'd have to think this through.
Yeah,
but,
and
sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, and you could do AS prepending on your side, but there's nothing you can affect in on the Azure side. But yes, yeah, you would see those routes coming in from both ExpressRoute LA and New York. But if LA fails, BGP will drop the routes, so that West Gateway all of a sudden loses those routes from LA, but it still has the routes from New York. Which means that if it tried to talk to that same VM, It would see the 10.1.1.1 in the 10.1/16, whoops, sorry, route, at which point it would follow that to LA. LA would hit your MPLS network that would route it back to Los Angeles, so the traffic would be delivered. Now, that's two trips across the U.S., which is not optimal, but you do maintain that connectivity. So that's kind of how, if you have a meshed networks or multiple express route circuits in the cloud, how you can do some traffic engineering, fairly crude with just ASPath. And again, for return traffic, if you're MPLS provider or if you're Ethernet and do your own layer 3, you'd use local preference to do the traffic engineering and the reverse flow back up to Azure. So this is just something that comes up a lot when we talk about disaster recovery. And what we recommend, if you're going to do disaster recovery, having two express route circuits becomes critical. We are resilient in a single location. So both in this example, in LA and in New York, there are two circuits in LA and two circuits in New York. So locally, we are very resilient. But if the entire facility goes down, that's where you need that geo presence, another geographical presence, to allow for full DR. So it is highly available in region or in that location, but to get the full disaster recovery, that's where the second express route circuit comes into play and how you can do the load balancing and traffic direction between those two. So with that, those are my slides. I'm going to go back through the chat window now and see if I missed any questions, and then we'll take questions at the end. So I'll turn it back to you, Olivier.
Thank you so much, John. Great presentation. Hope, folks, you've appreciated the content. Now we're going to be moving over to Greg's presentation. Greg is joining us from Checkpoint. So I don't know, Greg, would you like to take the take as a presenter, or you want me to move the slides? Greg, I see you're on mute.
Yes, can you all hear me now?
Yes, we can. Do you want to take over as presenter, or do you want me to move the slides for you?
You know, I think I can click through using the little triangles in the bottom, so I should be good to go.
If you do that, though, you have to click on the top. There's a little button that says take over as presenter, because it's only going to flip your view. It's not going to flip people's view.
Okay. You got it.
All right. So take it away, Greg.
Excellent. Thanks in advance, everyone, for joining us today. You know, we've seen a tremendous shift of customers moving services, platform and infrastructure service, into Azure, right? But despite the fact that a lot of the server and infrastructure folks are aware of all the abilities for orchestration, self-service, automation, and orchestration, yeah, there's a bit of a myth out there that a lot of the traditional security vendors and IT security tools don't fit in with public and hybrid cloud architectures, you know, that we don't support dynamic provisioning, that we don't support dynamic updates of rules, that we potentially lack some of the clustering and high availability and elasticity that customers really need in order to successfully move their services into the public cloud. And what we've seen a lot of times is customers have lifted and shifted applications just with the server teams. The networking teams get engaged when express routes come in, but the security teams are often the last to get engaged, or even at all. When in reality, network security fits into that hybrid cloud architecture, and the same exact on-premise solution that Checkpoint has to offer can also get deployed into public cloud environments. And whether we're talking about deploying an instance within a VNet, you know, single NIC or multi NIC, you know, we're using private IPs or public IPs, even HA clustering, and soon to have full support for VM scale sets, enabling customers to have the same level of high availability and resiliency in those public clouds. Most importantly, I think where customers are really interested in talking to us about now is how do we enable our security policies to have some type of automated discovery? And whether it's automated discovery of new virtual machines and new subnets, we're working on advanced capabilities for cloud architectures to allow what we refer to as our VSEC controller, and I'll talk about this a little bit later on, to automatically learn about new cloud assets. So as new VMs or new VNets or new subnets come into play, how do those firewalls and security controls automatically learn about them? And when we think about it, you know, a lot of customers are very interested in micro-segmentation. And again, there's a myth that micro-segmentation we can only do within our private data center. and that there's not the capabilities to do micro-segmentation within the public cloud. And that's really not the case. You know, at the end of the day, we work very closely with the cloud providers and their SDN infrastructure to help provide segmentation within the public cloud. And we use a combination of their route tables, multiple user-defined routes, to help provide security insertion into those public cloud environments. And we're able to do it in ways that not only protect the traditional north-to-south perimeter for internet-facing connectivity, but also for some internal segmentation, helping provide some east-to-west segmentation, really preventing that lateral movements within the cloud environments. You know, ultimately, Checkpoint VSEC is a suite of technology we have, and there's really two parts to it. The VSEC gateway, these are the virtual machines that run in those public and private clouds. So whether we're talking about running inside of Hyper-V or running inside of Azure, the same software capabilities that we have for next-gen firewall, intrusion prevention, anti-malware, antivirus, data loss prevention, can run in the public cloud or run in the private cloud or both. And since we're software, all the capabilities that we have come along with us. We're not dependent upon proprietary hardware to do SSL inspection or to do acceleration or clustering or dynamic routing as an example. The second half of the platform is what we refer to as the VSEC controller. And it's the VSEC controller that allows the automated security learning to happen and allowing us to create context-aware policies leveraging attributes that have potentially come in from those cloud providers. So the VSEC controller, in essence, sets up trust with the Azure infrastructure, acts as the information broker to consolidate the information and then distribute it out to the physical and virtual devices. Ultimately, that controller is also acting as the consolidation point for any logging for both public and private clouds. So if we drill a little bit deeper here, when we insert VSEC into Azure, it's not just basic firewalls that are kind of augmenting the network security groups, but all those advanced threat controls as well. And though there are basic security controls embedded in Azure, and we continue to use them, they're really rudimentary access control lists. They're not next-gen firewall. They don't have intrusion prevention. They lack some of the advanced sophistication in order to help detect malware, ransomware, DDoS, and other types of botnet activity. And that's really where providing VSEC into Azure provides an incremental additive benefit. And that all of the enterprise security controls that customers used to in their private data center move with us out to Azure when we're deployed. Now, I wanted to make a quick comment about that whole concept of the context-aware security policies, because it's not just Azure that we're consuming. It's also consuming from Cisco ACI or VMware or OpenStack or other cloud solutions out there, allowing us to build rules that are tied to these dynamic pointers. And we can mix and match these across a variety of different cloud solutions. So maybe a customer still has some VMware on their private cloud and they're moving to Azure in the public cloud. However, we would like the ability to go in and use both of these dynamic objects within our rule base. And whether these are dynamically learned natively from Active Directory about users and machines or natively learned through the VSEC controller, it allows us to build these context-aware security policies, allowing the rule sets to get updated automatically for you without the need for a traditional security administrator to log into the tools, update the firewall rules, and push them out to the gateways. And this right here is a fundamental shift in how customers manage their security controls. However, this is the direction that we see people wanting to go. Clearly, automation and orchestration is part of this, but people are trying to figure out how do we create context-aware policies that update themselves when the infrastructure folks add new virtual machines and new instances without somebody having to do a similar operation on the security side. Now, when we talk about the public cloud solution, actually we have to offer multiple consumption models that align with how customers are looking to consume within Azure. So traditionally we have our bring your own license where you buy licenses from Checkpoint partners, attach them to instances running in those public cloud, but we also have pay as you go. And these are hourly used depending upon how long you use the image and the image type that you're potentially running. Quite simply put, it's approximately $2,300 list price per virtual core to bring your own license. And you're going to pay per core, so depending upon a 2-4 or an 8-core instance, it might cost you a little more to get more performance. And then on the pay-as-you-go side, we have different tiers up to four cores, for example, 95 cents an hour. 8 and 16 core instances might be $1.95 an hour. And what we see is, especially for short-term burstable needs, the pay-as-you-go is a little bit more effective, cloud-friendly, and saves customers money for short-term deployments. For longer-term deployments, let's say 6 months and beyond, most customers gravitate towards the bring-your-own license. And what's nice is the bring-your-own license acts as a single pool of resources that customers can check out, activate in their gateways, and use across a variety of instances out there. So if we take a little bit of a look, we are in the Azure Marketplace. We have a variety of ARM templates available as well to help enable automated deployment. Whether you want to automate it with PowerShell or automate it with other API tools, utilizing those ARM templates to go ahead and roll out. Once the gateways are deployed, since we're software in nature, all of our security features can get activated on any of our instances out there. So maybe customers want to add, let's say, data loss prevention on the internet side, but only run the traditional next-gen firewall and threat prevention on the inside. Fundamentally, since we're software, all the things that we do in our physical data centers, we do in the public cloud as well. And since we're software, if customers are managing on-premise infrastructure and cloud infrastructure and their physical devices, one console manages everything. One management station allows you to kind of integrate all the rules, the policies, and the security controls from a single common console. Ultimately, networking security within the VNet itself allows you to bring that enterprise control, allows you to bring your next-gen firewall, and deploy it alongside those Azure VNets. And whether we're talking about a cluster on the perimeter, multiple gateways on the inside separating different applications or different tenants or different subnets, there's really an unlimited flexibility in how we choose to deploy VSEC. At the end of the day, we're working in conjunction with the route tables and the user-defined routes to enable the forwarding in and out of the VSEC gateways. However, the VSEC gateways run in the public cloud, just like any other virtual machine that you may be running out there. So if customers wanted to run an HA cluster, as an example, this is fully supported now. And one of the things that's unique and different, unlike the private data center where we can send things like a gratuitous ARP to the routers and switches, in the public cloud, the networking works a teeny bit differently. And in this case, we go ahead and actually send an API call onto Azure when a failover event happens. This potentially moves over the public IP addresses, it swings over the routes, it moves over any of the clustering attributes onto the gateways themselves. And the API calls back into Azure is what allows us to fail over from Firewall 1 into Firewall 2. So I just want to leave you with this thought. At the end of the day, Checkpoint VSEC, we are software. And it allows us to go ahead and have the ability to take our enterprise controls and deploy it across all of customer cloud environments. And whether they're living in the private cloud or moving to the public cloud or a combination of both, fundamentally, our software has the capability of operating in nearly any cloud environment. Olivia, I really thank you for the opportunity to talk to your team and the customers and the partners out there. We're looking forward to having future conversation with you all and helping our customers secure their public clouds.
Well, thank you very much, Greg, for being here this morning. Really appreciate it, and hopefully our audience did appreciate too. So I'm going to be unmuting the audience so that if you guys want to ask questions, then feel free to unmute yourselves. And but first, I will try to see if there's unanswered questions in the IMs here. Seen one from Dave Rendon. Any best practice to deploy failover servers in the VNet? Dave, do you want to unmute yourself? Do you want to put a little bit more context? If you cannot, I'll try to answer as I understand it, but you have to think like inside a VNet. As mentioned, Greg, virtual networking doesn't work exactly the same way as physical networking. So there's things you need to think about depending on what the workload is and what that virtual machine does. So if it's a web server, you could put it in front of, say, an internal load balancer, for example, and that'll give you some kind of failover. But it really depends on what the machine is doing. If you're talking about virtual machines, just like Checkpoint and Greg has talked about, then there's things that are built in that Checkpoint appliance to actually interact with the Azure API, such that when one fails, the other one can take over. So it really depends on what the workload is. I don't know if that answers your question, but if not, feel free to go further down in the and ask more questions in the IM. I see one more.
Yeah, Olivia, I pasted into the chat session our reference architecture for cluster gateways within Azure. So that is a public knowledge-based article. It has a sample high-level design as well as all the configuration steps both within Azure and in Checkpoint to make that happen.
Perfect. Thanks for that, Greg. I see one more question from Daryl. Which services are not supported across ER? MFA is not. CDN is not. CDN is not just because of the nature of CDN is that it needs to be close to you. So rerouting that over to ExpressRoute would just not make a lot of sense. So it is not supported. And there's other services that are not supported.
Olivia? Yeah, Kevin actually pasted the link in. Daryl,
okay,
if you follow
cool.
that link, you'll see most services are supported over public peering, but there are a few in the link that Kevin pasted in. So
yeah, the vast majority of Azure services are.
Yep.
What else? Did you guys see, John, Kevin, that you see through the IM that there's things?
I think most questions have been answered. If not, somebody speak out.
Feel free to unmute
yourself,
guys.
But I think I caught most of them. Kevin got a lot.
Anyone wants to pick
Come
up
on
the mic?
Now. Free tech support. Give it to us. Let's go. All right, what do we got? Recording. Oh, that's logistics. I can't answer that.
The recording, yes, I think. Hey, Jimmy, the IM is in the recording, correct?
Yeah, it's in there.
Okay,
awesome. As you watch the recording, as people do IM, it'll split off to the left. It'll show.
Okay. So what security framework does Azure adhere to? I'm not a security specialist. Is there when people in
the there are yeah, there's a compliance slide. I'll try and find the link, but we are certified under many, 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 many different compliance schemes for security. So if that answers the question, I'll find the link and paste it in the chat window. One sec.
Okay, I've got seeing a question here from John Smith, using O365 between India and U.S. All data has to reside in the U.S. Is ExpressRoute supported in this instance? It is definitely supported if you're allowed to use ExpressRoute, because as mentioned earlier on by Jamie, there is new guidance as to if customers should be using ExpressRoute or not. But pretending that in the case it is allowed and we allow you to do that, we fully support that. But there's things that needs to be taken into consideration, specifically on the Skype. I mean, if all people are joining bridges that are instantiated in the U.S. and they're all from India, and there's only one participant in the U.S., for example, it could cause some, the user experience might not be ideal. So there's things to think when you're doing that kind of stuff. Adarsh, Azure team, here's a few questions.
There's a long multi-point one from Adarsh.
Yeah. So ER link, customer being monitored by Azure team. I'm not sure what do you mean by monitoring. We don't, if the question is, do we alert or do we pick up the phone when it comes down?
Yeah,
the answer is,
there are a whole bunch of points on that question. So there are many points that are monitored along that linkages between the compute for the resources in the cloud, the actual physical network, and the service provider. There's a lot of monitoring points. So, yes, I would say the ExpressRoute link is being monitored. What are the triggers parametered being monitored? That is legion. So that's there's just so many things that are you know,
yeah,
the gateway health, circuit bandwidth, circuit up, BGP up, just all of those things along that entire path. So there's lots of things that we're monitoring internally. Very few things that you would see. So on the portal, you could see very high-level status-type indications. You can also do some I don't know that I call it necessarily diagnostics, but you can actually see the routes that Microsoft is receiving and like ARP information through PowerShell scripts. So there are things that you can do to check the state, and all of those things, of course, are being monitored on the back end. So I don't have a very concise answer for this, but there's a lot of stuff that's being monitored.
And what you just mentioned, John, on the PowerShell can now be viewed in the GUI since a couple of weeks.
Yes.
So that ARP and route info is available there too.
As long as you're using a layer 2 service provider. If you use layer 3, you still can't see that on the portal. But in many cases, you can. But through both cases, you can see it in PowerShell. Does customer
get... the one thing, and I don't know if he's asking this, but I kind of can take it. He can be implying, what about like when stuff happens? Keep in mind that our SLA is for availability at the moment, right? There is no performance metric or LA that we're going after. So.
All right. And Microsoft network is really, really large. So if you're talking from the East Coast to the West Coast, the destinations would always be the same, but the path that it takes could be different from one packet to another based on traffic conditions and things of that nature. So you wouldn't know about quote-unquote path changes within our network. You would be notified. We do have a status and a health page if an entire region or area was having issues. We do notify on the health dashboard, which is on Azure.com, but not a specific message to that individual user. That right now does not happen. I don't believe, unless, Olivier, do you know of anything like that would happen?
No.
Yeah.
And as far as number 5, the only thought I would have is it depends on your provider. That's actually probably more of a good question for a provider such as an Equinix. So Equinix has the ECX or what they call their cloud exchange. And yes, you can absolutely not just hook to Azure, but you can hook to pretty much anything else that exists from a cloud perspective. But how that, the details and the devil of those details is probably a conversation between mostly you and that provider and how to interconnect that.
And then there was one in there about the IPv4 crunch. That's a problem for everybody.
Yeah.
The way that this is solved is with private networking, we allow you to use your own private space. So every customer is using, but many customers are using the same 10.0 address spaces, but because they're all isolated virtual network, it's all good. On the Microsoft side, we've got quite a few IPv4 addresses available, so it is always a challenge, but it's something that we're keeping up with, and everything's good there. We're also working on V6 stuff, so the cavalry is coming. So, IPv4 I would say it's a concern, not necessarily a challenge. It's something that we always have to watch out for. But there are a lot of technologies that you can use to keep extending the life of V4, which we've been successful at so far.
Okay, and later, Ahmed Rafek asked the question if ER and site-to-site VPN can coexist. I don't know if that's been answered, but the answer is yes. But there's a little caveat there. If you're trying to do BGP VPN as of today, they don't coexist together. So keep that in mind. Martinovich.
Can multiple tenants, yeah. So basically, ExpressRoute can talk to ARM and ASM, the classic stuff, from the same circuit. So if you create an ASM or a classic ExpressRoute circuit, you can migrate it to ARM and then allow classic operations. So it's kind of complex. I put a link somewhere in the chat window to the documentation on this. But basically what that allows your ExpressRoute circuit, you could, once you have that established, you could link in private networking an ARM VNet to that circuit, and to that exact same circuit you could link an ASM or a classic VNet to that circuit. So both virtual network types and therefore the resources associated in it can talk to the same ExpressRoute circuit, but you have to enable it for classic operation. So you have to migrate it to ARM if it's an older type, or if you created an ARM circuit, you have to allow classic operations. And as long as you allow classic operations, it can talk to both type of VNets.
And we got one question, I think, that would be for you, John, from Dan Martinovich, which is going to the LA-New York example. Earlier, you talked about needing two express routes if someone wanted multiple path in a DR scenario.
Yeah, so if you just wanted to have, let's see, for the full mesh, So if you need to have two geo-separated locations, you're going to need to have two express route circuits.
And then his question was, does something like that mean we would need two ER subscriptions to complete that mesh design? And the answer to that is no. They don't need to be in different subscriptions. They can be in the same subscription. They can be in different subscriptions. It's, you know, it's the person that manages the Azure subscriptions to decide how they do it.
Yeah, two ER circuits, but not subscriptions.
So Philip has an interesting question. John, you might want to take that. Any recorded security breaches to date in the Azure cloud?
That is, there's so many ways to answer that question. So from a DDoS perspective, from a probing perspective, we're constantly being attacked and probed and those type of things. As far as recorded security breaches, I am not aware of any. Now, I can't say that it hasn't happened, because I don't know that I would know if it happened. So is it recorded? Probably not. That would be probably something we could get you in touch with our security teams for more information on that. But all I can say is not that I am aware of to, like, the Azure Fabric or, like, VM escapes or anything like that. I haven't heard of anything like that. But, again, they might not tell me if that had happened. So, I can't comment on that one with any authority.
So Daryl Harrington had a question. Do we recommend using high-performance gateways for ER? And that, Daryl, will depend on what kind of performance you need to reach that circuit. Not that circuit, but that virtual network. So if you want 2 gigabits per second performance, then yes, you need a high-performance gateway. If you're okay with 1 gig, then a standard gateway is okay. And if you're okay with 500 megabits per second, then the basic gateway is.
No. Basic is no longer allowed for express route. So it's going to be standard or high. Yeah, we're making that change. If it hasn't already gone out, it's going out soon. Too many problems with the lower bandwidth. So, yeah.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, we need the technology that's in the standard SKU as opposed to the basic SKU. So no more basic SKU for express route.
Thanks for clarifying that.
Yep. No problem. Yeah, that's, like I said, I'm not even sure if that's in production yet, but I'm talking like it is.
Okay, so it should come soon. I think last week it was not, so.
Okay.
There's other questions, but we're kind of running a little bit out of time, and I don't know if they've been, Kevin, did you, were you able to keep up with them? Oh, Kevin is no longer on. Okay, trying to see here. Azure websites can connect with VNet. Where are the Azure websites?
Yeah, I'm reading as fast as I can, but...
How can on-premise desktop use VNet via ER to access Azure websites? Well, if the Azure websites don't live inside a virtual network, then you'd have to use the public peering or the straight internet would be the answer to that. Is there a way for customers to see ER usage using 100 megs ER, but as usage increases, we need to see how close did we get to that 100 limit. Currently, it would be something that would be either delivered by your ExpressRoute partner, or you can always build yourself something to take the bytes in and out counter and draw, you know.
Yeah, we do have a crude counter, but it's a little. It's accurate. It's just the time period isn't always known, so you'd have to track that over time.
Yeah, and oftentimes, I mean, inside of your network, you could have already some of these solutions in place. You would just have to monitor the proper interfaces. Yep. That could help.
Olivier, I am apologize. I need to jump to another meeting.
No issues. Thanks a lot, Greg. Thanks a lot, John. We're a little bit over time here, so we'll post the links. And feel free to join the future sessions. Next one will take place in 2 Fridays, so that's September 30th. So thanks, everyone. We're a lot of guys on the call. Appreciate your presence and your questions. So have a great weekend, everybody.
Thanks, all. Bye-bye.